idea of what Loma or Loma Land is?
Yeah, you said it.
Okay. I'll just put that right here. Okay.
So we're going to slowly explore a little bit of Blavatsky's ideas around awareness, consciousness, and meditation. Before getting into some more of the slides and details, I thought I would share a very basic and I hate to call it simple, but simple doesn't mean always easy practice. I think maybe many here are familiar with, in that she encouraged people to, her students, to engage in a, what you could call a recapitulation of the day meditation practice. So today, of course, mindfulness is very popular and all forms of meditation are popular. And when we sit and meditate, we allow things to come and to go and to arise and to be present. And then, in a way, I thought it was very interesting what Blavatsky adds to that, in a sense, in that at the end of the day, she recommended then going through every moment of the day from the beginning to the end again as a recapitulation, and do that in a meditative manner in light of the higher self. So what is this higher self, you know? What is this view, this more essential view? Or in a moment we'll see what she calls the transmural view. So this is really a very beneficial and useful process, I think. And it also is one that has deeper meaning and benefit, for example, in the teachings from Theosophy and from the recorded incidences of near-death experience. What happens at the moment of death is a complete recapitulation of our entire life, happens spontaneously. It's intrinsic in us. So practicing this at the end of every day also has that same benefit to unwind our attachments and places we get stuck, or things we've bumped into, or little traumas, or things like that. It's very helpful and beneficial practice to do that. The Irish poet and George Russell, A.E., would do this practice regularly. He'd encountered, you know, studied with Blavatsky and had been in London. So A.E. would do this practice to a very high degree, you might say. He really did it a lot. And then it would go further. So where he got, it became so natural, he could like trigger it as like in an more effortless manner, and he would just start going back through his life. So ultimately he could sit in meditation and unravel, go back through his life to this point of his birth and then before. He describes it in his book, Candle of Vision. So this is something that's, you know, one can enhance one's clarity in the nature of one's mind. So I thought we'd actually do this for a minute. It's very helpful, and maybe just pick like maybe the first quadrant of the day, like from when you got up this morning until noon. So the day is kind of divided into four quadrants, you know. So we have the initial period of when we are born into the day, you know, this period. And then, you know, there are different levels to doing this too. We have the literal events of the day, like we can say, okay, I, you know, woke up in San Diego this morning, I was on the train, I came up here, and these people or these characters got on and off the train, and all these interactions I had with them, etc. Well, that's just kind of the narrative, you know. Then there's also the qualitative aspects of the day. you know, the more subtle interactions of the day. So as we reflect on this, we get a fuller sense and a fuller experience of what we're actually engaging in, and a fuller sense of our habit patterns and our ways of perceiving. These things come more into focus through this kind of meditation practice. So one can actually go through, say, you know, say from this morning until noon, the event, and then the emotion, and then the, you know, almost as the theosophical meditation, we have the based on the seven principles of human being. Each one of those has a different quality for that, or quality to add in that meditation process, in that part of the day. So maybe just spend like, maybe we'll just do like 3 or 4 minutes and revisualize the moment from when you woke until noon, say. I'll ring these again. And just from a point of equanimity, see what you notice, you know, see what sticks out, see what, allow yourself the space for it to just arise naturally. We'll do this fairly quickly. This can be done with much more time. Then maybe go back over the same period now, and instead of the details, just allow oneself to get a sense of the quality for that entire period. What did it feel like? What was the essential element of it? What was the energy of that space? Just allow that. And we'll look a little bit, not in great detail, but just a little bit. Again, Blavatsky had this idea of correspondences. What is a correspondence? You know, every day, every planet, every color, every sound, every element, every part of the body, everything is interrelated. Correspondence is the interrelationship of things. So again, when we are doing this kind of recapitulation meditation, we can allow some space to have a feeling, maybe for a symbolic form or a color or something that represents that period or time of the day or the whole day. It can be a form of inner work in that sense. So here the first fundamental proposition of her secret doctrine. Omnipresent, eternal, immutable principle upon which all speculation is impossible, unthinkable and unspeakable. And then of course, we're 1,500 pages of description following that. Mm-hmm. Oh, is that a contradiction or is that some paradox there? Mm-hmm. So I think paradox. Unthinkable, unspeakable. All speculation. Well, speculation may be the key word. Yes, one. Not to speculate, but to really engage deeply. She quotes the Zohar, the narrative is the cloak. So we have to get beneath the surface narrative. But it's the same with the narrative of our daily life, you know. So just to meditate on the, in her recapitulation of this, the events is not the point. The point is to get, you know, what's the beneath the events as well. And again, the first fundamental proposition is a form of what could be called non-dualism. It's not in space and time as the other two are. So in her Voice of the Silence, she talks about self-knowledge. Self-knowledge as of loving deeds, the child or the result, you know. So motivation is essential in the inner path in Blavatsky's world. This is the, you know, this cuts through the problem of here described by Carl Jung, the psychologist, you know, where power advances, love retreats. So Blavatsky's placing the pivot of compassion at the center of the motivation for understanding the inner life. Oh, I have to read this.
Okay.
Or you can read it from there. Can you read it from there?
Yes. Blavatsky's transmural view. On seeking the source, how is this to be done? What is the best way for achieving such an object? Was the ever-recurring question. To make our plan clear, an illustration may be attempted. When a tourist coming from a well-explored country suddenly reaches the borderland of a terra incognita, hedged in and shut out from view by a formidable barrier of impassable rocks, he may still refuse to acknowledge himself baffled in his exploratory plans. Ingress beyond is forbidden, but if he cannot visit the mysterious region personally, he may still find a means of examining it from as short a distance as can be arrived at. Helped by his knowledge of landscapes left behind him, he can get a general and pretty correct idea of the transmural view if he will only climb to the loftiest summit of the altitudes in front of him. Once there, he can gaze at it at his leisure, comparing that which he dimly perceives with that which he has just left below. Now that he is, thanks to his efforts, beyond the line of the mists and the cloud-capped cliffs.
I found it a nice poetic Blavatsky. You know, she had her metaphysical side, her polemical side, but she also very mystical poetic side. So this is right in the middle of her secret doctrine. It's a very kind of inspirational poetic view. And then her unique word used, transmural. What's really interesting about Blavatsky, again, she's Russian, she knew French fluently, English she learned fairly young and then learned again. But she uses words in English that nobody else does. Transmural isn't used anywhere else in English except in medical language. As far as I know, I was trying to find it out, you know. So transmural is used in, like, if a coronary artery has a blockage all the way from the outside all the way through to the inside, that's a transmural issue. It's the only place it's used. It's not used elsewhere. But what's interesting is she used the word transmural. So this means all pervasive, even this very surface, to the most deep hidden parts. She didn't use the word transcendental, meaning something not here but somewhere else. Transmural, again, is a word that implies non-dualism. Everything is included in this first fundamental proposition, in this lofty idea.